So my name is Venkat Gattamneni. I work in the Windows Azure team, and presenting with me will be Ganesh from our team, as well as Shane from Equinix, and Noam from Zadara Storage. So this is basically three companies talking to you today about ExpressRoute. And the title of this session is Connecting Private and Public Clouds Through Exchange Providers. By the way, how many guys have already heard about ExpressRoute? Show of hands. Perfect. Perfect. And this week is particularly interesting for us because we hit what we call a general availability milestone, which is a cool thing. What that basically means is you can start using this service in production, right? That's what GA typically means for Azure services. And in this session, really, there are three things we want to do. First, I'll just quickly give you a brief overview of what ExpressRoute service is. Then we'll dig into some details about how the solution has been architected with Equinix. And then Zadara Storage will talk to you about how you can use Zadara Storage via ExpressRoute. That's a really cool scenario, really. So fundamentally, before I talk about ExpressRoute, if you ask customers, what are they doing today? You know, if there were no ExpressRoute, this is basically what, you know, customers are doing, right? So a typical customer or an enterprise might have a bunch of their sites, right, which are connected using a private network, and that private network could be provided by a telco provider. But for connectivity to the public cloud, however, we're asking them to go over the public internet, right? That's what customers are being asked to do prior to ExpressRoute. Obviously, you know, we do have the ability for customers to do IPsec VPN over internet, so it's still secure, although it's over the public internet. But there are fundamentally a few issues with that connectivity, right? And the issues are basically listed there. You might have greater networking costs. You might have higher latencies up going through the public internet than you would have on your private network. So basically, you cannot run all your applications that you're running internally up in Azure or public cloud because of this latencies that you experience. And also because it's the links over the internet, the throughputs that you're getting are not as big as what you might be getting on your private networks. I'm told internet, the best internet connection out there will give you probably about 100 megabits per second, which is still not fast enough compared to your private networks, right? And then obviously limited bandwidth. You know, your throughput is just not there with internet. What with ExpressRoute, this is what we're trying to do, right, on the right-hand side. We really want the public cloud or Azure to be on your private network. Basically, take the internet out of the equation, so that Azure or public cloud is just sitting on your network like another customer site that you might have, another data center that you might have. And obviously, when doing this, you can avoid the risks of, you know, just using public shared infrastructure, which is the internet. So obviously, these things are a lot more secure. It also takes away complexity of having to manage different connections, one via the internet and one via the public network, one via the private network. And obviously, like we talked before, latencies, bandwidths are a lot better with a service like ExpressRoute, right? So that's the fundamental problem we're trying to solve with ExpressRoute. So what is really ExpressRoute? It's an Azure service that allows you to connect your private networks up to Azure, bypassing the internet. And by doing that, you get high throughput and low latency. That's what ExpressRoute really is. And the benefits are obvious. What you see on the right-hand side are all the benefits. Predictable performance, because these are not over the internet. You actually get the performance of your choosing all the time for your applications. These are on your own network, right, connected to Azure over a private line. So they're not exposed to the internet. So they are, by that very nature, a lot more secure. You get high throughput. In fact, if you've already checked our announcements, even when we were in preview, we were offering up until 10 Gbps connections. So if you think about it, 10 Gbps versus what you get with internet, right, 100 Mbps, that's a big difference. And for certain cases where you're transferring large amounts of data between Azure and your private networks, this actually can save you money as well, right? So those are fundamentally the benefits of using ExpressRoute versus just using IPsec tunnel over the public internet. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, the going over IPsec over the public internet is actually a pretty neat solution, and it is quite viable for a lot of scenarios. But for some scenarios, ExpressRoute makes a ton of sense. So typically when we talk to customers, hey, what is ExpressRoute most useful for? These are the kinds of scenarios that we hear from them. One is definitely, I don't have to tell you folks, storage backup and DR purposes, right? It's a big general workload for the public cloud. You want to basically use Azure or public cloud as a backup site for your data that's your on-premises. But in order to get the data up into the cloud, you need a fast connection because you're talking about a lot of data, right? And obviously, if there were some disaster and you want to use that backup data for your recovery purposes, you want an equally fast pipe to, have that data back, right? So that's a big use case. Obviously, with dev and test, again, we've heard a lot of customers say that, hey, these VMs are pretty big, gigabytes of VMs that you want to get up in the cloud and back and forth. So that's a big use case for ExpressRoute. We've heard from some customers who are using, a lot of big data, spewing all the data, and they want to use it to analyze Azure Compute to analyze that data. How do you get all of that data into Azure? So that's a big use case for us. And then we've talked to media companies who also have large media assets that they're trying to get into Azure, right? So that's a big use case for us as well. And the last two cases that you see with hybrid apps as well as productivity apps, those are very interesting use cases. So hybrid apps is where you can have a hybrid app with multiple tiers. Maybe some tiers are on-premises, right? Maybe you have an Active Directory on-premises, some compute up in Azure, maybe domain joined, but you want those fast, low latency links so that you can authenticate your users, right? You don't want internet to be the bottleneck there. So that's where we see hybrid apps. And then if you want to use something like SharePoint for your internal users, you want to put the SharePoint farm maybe in Azure, but you don't want any of the traffic between your internal users and the SharePoint to touch public internet. You can use ExpressRoute as well. So that's basically an example of productivity applications. So these are general kinds of scenarios that we think, ExpressRoute would be most useful for customers. So going forward, let's dig into a little bit of the details of what ExpressRoute flavors are. Fundamentally, there are two flavors of ExpressRoute. What you see on the left-hand side is what we call the Exchange Provider flavor. This is basically connecting to Azure at an exchange provider location, what we call an ExpressRoute partner location. These locations are co-location facilities. Today we have Equinix as a partner, and these facilities are Equinix co-location facilities. And customers, you can have your gear, if you have your gear already in a co-location facility, you can just have those cross connections to Azure. Or if you don't, obviously you can work with your NSP to land yourself at Equinix. That's the left-hand side scenario. On the right-hand side scenario is what we call a network service provider scenario, where we're partnering with the big telcos such as AT&T, Verizon, BT, and so on. So if you have an MPLS VPN being provided by one of these guys, you can basically add Azure to your network, just another node as the picture shows, right, onto your WAN network. So that's the right-hand side scenario. So basically, there are two flavors of using ExpressRoute. And what you see below are all the different partnerships that we have going on in order to deliver the solution to you. Obviously, the success of this really depends on us collaborating with all these folks out there in the industry who are your connectivity providers already. And to this date, we have all of these partnerships that we have announced. And obviously, momentarily, Equinix will talk about how they're building the solutions with us. And for this session, particularly, we'll focus on the exchange provider scenario. How is that solution architected, and how do you really have those connections at an exchange provider location? All right, so going further, ExpressRoute, if you choose the left-hand side scenario, which is the exchange provider scenario, these are the tiers that are available. You have 200 Mbps connections all the way to 10 Gbps connections. There is a monthly fee associated with each of those connections that you choose, and there is an included quantity of data that you can transfer that is associated with each of those tiers, and that is baked into the price that you pay basically on a monthly basis. And if you are more interested in pricing details, we have all of these details listed on our website. As with all of our services, ingress is basically free, even when using ExpressRoute. Egress, which is outbound traffic, those are the included quantities with the different connection tiers that we have. And the other neat thing that we announced this week is that we have an SLA with ExpressRoute of 99.9%. So this is the actual dedicated circuit uptime SLA that we have announced. So basically, if you want to use it for production workloads that requires an SLA, that's a pretty neat thing to have as well. Now, in terms of locations, you might have a question. So where exactly can I use ExpressRoute? Where are these locations where I can connect up to Windows Azure? What you see on this map, the green big dots are Azure data centers across the world. And the orange dots are the ExpressRoute locations that are available today. right? So we have two locations in the US that are already lighted up, and you can use those connections to reach all of the Azure regions in the US. Those are in Washington, DC and Silicon Valley. And then we have one location in London to basically for European customers who want to reach our two regions in the Europe region. Obviously, in the coming months, by the end of this year, we're working with providers like Equinix to light up 13 additional locations across the world. So there are going to be more locations coming very, very soon. So that's definitely what we're looking to do. So that's what I had in terms of providing an overview. What I want to do is, there's one question. Yes, go ahead, sir. So these locations are exchange provider locations, but the way we're working is if you have your network service provider, you basically choose one of those locations for connecting to Azure.
So, for example, with Defcon, I can choose
London data center as a. So with NetBond right now, you can choose Washington, D.C. and Silicon Valley only. Yeah, it's in the U.S. But again, if you are going with a telco, you can be at any place in the U.S., but you basically choose those two locations to connect up to Azure. Perfect. Any other questions before I move on? Wonderful. If not, let me give it over to Shane, who will basically walk you through the rest of the conversation on how exactly Equinix is architecting the solution with us. Over to you, Shane.
Thank you, Venkat. Boy, it's an exciting group this morning. I haven't been this excited about a product launch since I did a week-long intensive training on Bob a few years ago. So I had to get the joke in there. Come on, guys. My name is Shane Guthrie. I'm Director of Innovation at Equinix, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit today about how we've built ExpressRoute in the Equinix facilities and how you can order that service either through us as an exchange provider or through network service providers that might be coming into the facility. First, some of you may not be aware of Equinix, so I wanted to talk for about 20 slides or so about what we do. We are a data center company, 31 markets. We have 100 facilities worldwide and 10 million plus square feet under contract. But in reality, that's not the core of our business. The core of our business is interconnection and exchange. We started the business a little over 15 years ago. Equinix actually stands for Equitable Internet Exchange. We have today over 1,000 networks in our facilities. They run across 11 different internet exchanges. We're about 100% of the tier one routes, and about 90% of the routes which are available on the internet are available to you. We have three of the most interconnected data centers on the planet, Silicon Valley, DC, and Frankfurt. And Silicon Valley and DC obviously are the first facilities that are being brought up for ExpressRoute in the United States. But the real thing that we noticed about 5 or 6 years ago was that customers were coming to our facilities in order to interconnect with each other and do business with each other. So what we've begun to do is sponsor different types of exchanges where different types of data can be transferred back and forth. The first of these was a financial exchange interconnection network where people do low latency, high frequency trading. We've also moved into real-time advertising, bidding, and distribution. And finally, content and digital media interconnection and distribution of large assets. So I think that between our 4,500 customers, a lot of them enterprises, some of them service providers, we have a huge footprint of people that you can interconnect with and take your Azure instances and your enterprise instances and be able to consume services from the networks at large. So Venkat stole my thunder. We are launching in three markets, Silicon Valley, Washington, D.C., and London. We're working on an additional 16 markets by year end, and hopefully over the next couple of years, you'll see all of the markets that we're in penetrated by Azure ExpressRoute and available. First, I wanted to talk for just a second about the Cloud Exchange, because I'll use this as a mechanism to describe how ExpressRoute is plumbed throughout the rest of this presentation. So the Cloud Exchange was built over the past 2 years as a place where we could actually bring in layer two connections from the millions of on-net buildings that currently exist via Metropolitan Ethernet today, bring those layer two connections in, and then connect them up to other software as a service types of clouds. Express Route represents a very big leap in the evolution of Cloud Exchange, because this is a fabric which is fully automated in its provisioning. We use software-defined networking protocols in order to build connections and subconnections or virtual connections. And this allows us to actually provision these services through the data center in real time via API or via a portal integrated into the APIs on this. This is a massive change over the way we've done interconnections for the past 5 or 6 years, where typically you might have taken 2 to 4 days to get an interconnection. Now you can do an interconnection in a matter of minutes. So for Cloud Exchange, we did talk a little bit about the value positioning already. But you know, one of the key things that really can be brought up here is the fact that you can have customers in a customer cage in Equinix. You can have customers coming in via MPLS or Metropolitan Ethernet connection from their headquarters or local enterprise data centers. And you can mix all of this together into one big layer 2 domain that also includes your Azure instances and be able to have all of that managed under one set of infrastructure. So, go ahead. Mm-hmm. So a lot of enterprises like to use already lit services. Metropolitan Ethernet is probably the most popular, but you can use MPLS or VPLS. You can bring it into a cage where you can have infrastructure co-located in Equinix and put things like storage, network POPs. I'll talk about those in a minute. And then you can also have your Azure instances. You'll signal into those. You'll have a layer 2 connection in there. Then you'll actually tell Azure what your networks are on that entire layer 2 network, and Azure will point through the Express Route gateways back into your layer 2. So you don't even have to use the internet gateways, or you can bypass them completely if you want to. So within the Express Route product, we have a couple of different components. There's a network node from Microsoft, US East and West, and in London now. We have fiber backhaul into the Azure compute locations directly. Microsoft takes down a cage and puts the network nodes into the Equinix facility. And those nodes are then interconnected through multiple 10 gig Ethernet connections into our Cloud Exchange. So we have a physical connection already from the Cloud Exchange into Azure. And then from the Cloud Exchange, we interconnect into customer cages or into network service providers. And then we can actually start plumbing the layer 2 connection through the Cloud Exchange over those 10 gig connections into Azure Express Route. So how does that work in practice? With the Azure cage interconnected into the regions via Microsoft networking, and then you take 2 different connections from 2 different gateways, for redundancy's sake, into 2 different Cloud Exchange switching layers. So these layers are kept separate so that we can actually provide a redundancy level of the physical connection at 4 nines availability. From there, we take 2 connections back out into the customer cage, and then the customer can put in 1 or 2 routers or switches in their cage. And we can actually plumb an MPLS LSP all the way from the customer edge into the Azure edge through our switching fabric. And by plumbing this MPLS LSP, what that enables us to do is actually fail over in case of the loss of one piece of the switching fabric in any one of the 3 locations. And this gives you your redundancy that you've been looking for into your direct connection into Azure. Any questions on that? Yes. So you can aggregate multiple layer 2 connections, and I'll talk about that in one of the use cases. What we did find is sometimes, actually there's a slide I think on it here, an evolution. People ask, why did we do virtual connections? Because physical cross connections are relatively cheap, relatively reliable. Obviously, there's been an evolution in the way people access their cloud services. Today, people have been using internet access, but what we saw as of a couple of years ago was the direct interconnection to various cloud services in order to obtain the speed benefits and other things. But that, again, is like a 2 to 4 day provisioning time. There's also, you have to dedicate a port. You have one flow, one port mapping. And this is rather cumbersome when you want to be able to interconnect to multiple services within the data center. So what we actually did was migrated to virtual connections for multiple reasons. First one is a rapid provisioning. So we can do software-defined networking and provisioning via portals. The second reason is a lot of enterprises were asking us how they could isolate or bifurcate their traffic. Various departments might want to go to different VNets within Azure. You might want to have different services available to you from elsewhere in the data center to be able to combine with that traffic. So the virtual connections are really not only the logical extension, but probably the most versatile mechanism that you have to interconnect to Azure. Any questions on that? Yes.
So is the virtual connection just from the cloud exchange,
or is that connected all the way to the MPLS? Like, do we need a customer page? Do we need to have a customer page with a router cable? You will if you want them to be an Equinix customer. A lot of customers will have, and we'll talk about that in the use cases, but will have some infrastructure that they want to put in a cage so that they can centrally locate it between their enterprise location and between Azure. But if you're going to use a second scenario, which is you're going to come in over one of the network service providers that are announced, then they can actually plumb you all the way through to Azure. They'll be the customer of record on the Cloud Exchange. And I actually show, in just a moment, I'll show the key exchange how that works. Pricing for ExpressRoute. For us, there's two different mechanisms here. It's standard pricing if they are an Equinix customer. If they're not a customer, we have a remote port option for how we bring those customers on board. And as you can see, what we've tried to do is actually make this as inexpensive as possible. Anybody who's familiar with Equinix recognizes that we typically, for cross-connect, have been charging anywhere between $500 and $1,000 MRC for fiber cross-connect. We've actually lowered the price as low as we could possibly get it. We have a non-recurring charge up front just to essentially pay for the port. And then the MRC covers port over the life of the contract. And then you can get your virtual circuits and the committed information rates that Venkat was talking about before. The only change that happens really on the remote port option is now we just have the port charge is a one-time with a single cost. And then it's a 1 gig limitation, and you got, again, the same committed information rates. So back to answer your question before, how we provision this. The enterprise will actually come to the Azure website. They'll set up their Azure services on the website, and they'll get a service key from Microsoft, which identifies the VNet that they've created, and it's associated with all the compute and store instances that you have. Then they'll go to the portal, choose where they want the Azure site to terminate in the Equinix facility, pass us that service key, and regardless of whether they're a service provider or a customer, there's a slight change in the way that the information is entered into the portal. If you are a customer of a service provider, you have to get a letter of authority that allows that service provider to act on your behalf to be able to get the plumbing done. But other than that, there's really no change to the way provisioning is done from our perspective. And when we provision via an API integration that we have with Microsoft Azure, we will pass that service key on, and then they will associate that service key with the VNet and that connection coming out to the ExpressRoute. From there, once the Layer 2 connection is established, you bring up a BGP session at Layer 3 and exchange the routes with Microsoft, or announce the routes to Microsoft that you would like passed on your ExpressRoute connection, and you're rocking and rolling, and it's a matter of minutes. Does that answer your question, sir? Okay. So what I wanted to kind of close out with today is a handful of example cases that we've been working on. Some of these are very basic cases. I'll go through a few of them here, and then some of them are ones that we've actually been working to prototype so that you can see them in action. Or even come in and get reference configurations and help your customer to bring them up. So we're a big believer in the hybrid cloud momentum that's occurring in the industry right now. We recognize that cloud services can be used for a lot of flexibility and a lot of interesting scenarios. Probably the biggest one that we see today is one called Own the Base and Rent the Spike. And that's where the customer buys a certain amount of cage space, or they have their own infrastructure in the data center. They're still depreciating that over regular financial records. And what they want to do is be able to deal with a spike in service or utilization that is unusual for them, and they want to use cloud services to do that. So ExpressRoute makes an obvious enabler to that type of scenario. It gives you the ability to actually burst into Azure, utilize compute and storage in Azure as a secondary or sometimes even as a primary mechanism for providing services either inside to your enterprise or out to the world. Second one is a lot of customers are coming to us in very sensitive industries, medical industry, content industry, so on and so forth, where they want to keep their data secured or they have certain policies or compliance that has to be accounted for. And so what they'll do is they'll put storage in our facility and then actually use the high-speed and low-latency interconnection into Azure to be able to apply Azure services on top of that data, yet still keep that data at rest in a facility that's localized to them. And that might mean doing things like analytics or other services, being able to boot compute instances in Azure off of storage instances in private connection and so on and so forth. Third one is actually a very interesting use case. So a lot of people don't want to have their network connectivity going out through internet gateways. They want to be able to apply their own policy or use things like private CDN infrastructure or other things within their enterprise. So what they'll do is they'll set up their services in Azure and then point the network connection for those services back into Equinix and use Equinix as the gateway either through the peering infrastructure that we provide or taking transit directly from a provider and be able to use their cage to put the type of equipment in to do load balancing and policy application that they may be interested in doing. This is the same thing, so virtual networking. Really, the primary use case that you see with Azure and ExpressRoute is where you can take your elements within Azure and add those virtual networks into your private network infrastructure that you run for your enterprise today. So this is a huge one. A lot of customers are coming to us. And the net effect of that is actually being able to use public cloud infrastructure like Azure as a part of your own private cloud or as an extension of your own private cloud. So this is a huge one, and we see tons of enterprise customers that want to do this. A great use case also is sometimes you're running your private infrastructure and people need ready-made or instantaneous business continuity or disaster recovery. So what this allows you to actually do is take private applications or key applications, keep them on-premise, but then do other types of services pushing out to Azure for that business continuity and disaster recovery. And then this one is really great. I'd say probably one in three customers that I go talk to today want to be able to take the flexibility that Azure provides in their ability to do dev and test, and then do that in Azure, but then actually promote that infrastructure back into their private infrastructure when it comes time for it to go to production. So this is great because it allows the devs to work with their own instances. You can snapshot instances, do other things which are of interest to you and use the flexibility there, but then bring it back in and promote it into production in a controlled environment as well. And then finally, this one comes up not so often, but still there are a lot of people out there with mainframe applications or applications that haven't been made into multi-tenant type of applications on the internet. And so what we see a lot of is people that will take that infrastructure, put it into a private cage somewhere or into their enterprise data center, and then be able to build web front ends to that infrastructure and essentially cloudify, I love using buzzwords, I hope you guys love them too, cloudify services for that application and get it out to the internet much faster than they would have before. So I did three examples using Microsoft technology that I just kind of wanted to share very quickly with you. The first one is using Hyper-V. So there are a lot of customers that have Hyper-V management infrastructure within Equinix facility today. They run very large Microsoft services platforms. And what they want to be able to do is take and manage some of their Azure instances with the same infrastructure that they use to manage their private instances. So this example would be where you would have all of your private instances in the cage, and then you would have an extension into Azure of that management capability. Any questions on that one? It should be straightforward. Second one is one called domain joining. So this is actually very popular. A lot of people use Active Directory services to do federated identity for their enterprise and do AAA. So what this allows you to do is actually run those Active Directory services in their enterprise data center or an Equinix facility, and then bring all of your Azure instances and Azure infrastructure under that Active Directory domain. And this allows you, obviously, you know, select policy enforcement or expansion again, since this is a layer two connection into Azure, of your infrastructure into the cloud. Any questions on that one? Yeah, you guys are easy, man. Did you not drink any coffee this morning? The final one that I wanted to talk to was virtual desktop. This is a great example right now. There are a lot of companies that are doing VDI services, a lot of IT companies that are looking at VDI, especially as you have multiple platforms like the Surface and other things out there, and people want to be able to access their data on the go. Yet corporate IT, a lot of times, wants to ensure that that data is kept within their policy domain so that they can do backups and they can do maintenance and other things that they want to do with that data. So what happens is people will put remote desktop instances out in the cloud. That's what you interconnect to when you're trying to come in from the internet. But on the private side, you might put your controllers on the back end and then be able to actually put your applications on the back end as well. Again, you've got such a high volume of data that you can move through the express route connection and such a low latency that it's almost indistinguishable from an infrastructure perspective. And it gives you the incredible ability to scale that Azure gives you on the front end. So if you have hundreds, if not thousands, or sometimes tens of thousands of users, you can do that very quickly. And you don't have to pay for that infrastructure up front. So a great example of that is a company called Accelera. So we have a program within Equinix called the Solution Validation Center. And that's where anybody who's a customer or a potential customer can come in and validate what we're selling for free for 3 months and build their use cases out. We'll help document them. We'll help get the configurations together. We'll help bring the technology partners together. And in this case, Accelera was a technology partner who's doing VDI services out in the marketplace. And they came in and checked out ExpressRoute and took a look at the fundamentals of not only the performance of ExpressRoute, but the cost savings of ExpressRoute. And what this really brought back to them was the ability to save on upfront cost for deploying their service immediately. That was about $300,000 that they were able to save in upfront CapEx. But then they figure over, what was that number, about 30% in overall IT savings over a five-year period using ExpressRoute. Because the flexibility that they have, and the ability to onboard customers quickly, and the ability to not utilize infrastructure when they don't need it. So this was a huge savings for them. You know, we'd like to thank them for making this use case available to us. And if anybody would like to see this, we've put this out on our website so that you can actually see all of the details of it or even replicate it if you would like to. Finally, another great partner, you'll see them at the Tech Expo here today, is NetApp. NetApp has always been very advanced in coming in and taking a look at the performance parameters of what we promise. And they've allowed us very graciously to talk about the testing that they've done with ExpressRoute within our facilities. And what they actually saw was by using ExpressRoute and NetApp storage arrays, they were actually able to see about a 36% increase overall in the performance over using the internet gateways. And that's not even counting IPsec encryption overhead or other things. So this has been a very powerful thing for people who are doing private storage. We also have been working with a bunch of other storage vendors who are validating their solutions against ExpressRoute and the SVC as well. Again, I'd encourage you to come take a look at what we have, and we can provide reference configurations. But I think that this kind of puts the meat behind the performance promises that we've put out there about Azure ExpressRoute. So we're going to have a demo now by my friend Ganesh of something that we did in the Solution Validation Center with SharePoint that I think you guys will find pretty interesting. And if there are any questions, I would encourage you, we'll be here after the session. I would love to talk to you. I can give you a little bit more input on how Bob can be virtualized if you really want to. And thank you for
your excellent. Thank you, Ken. Good morning, everyone. How's it going? Excellent. So My name is Ganesh Srinivasan. I'm a program manager in the Azure networking team. So I work in the engineering team behind ExpressRoute. You know, it's been a blast working on this technology from day one, working with partners such as Shane, and you'll see Norm pretty soon up in stage. So it's been great. We've talked a lot of terms, we've said a lot of abstract things, and you've heard a lot about how cool the service is. So the one thing that I wanted to do is show you the service in action. So what I'm going to do is show you actually a SharePoint farm that's set up in a way where it's half of the SharePoint farm is sitting in the Solution Validation Center in Equinix, and the other half is running in Windows Azure. So this is a way to truly build a hybrid application. Every tier in this application has been split in a way where part of it is sitting on premises, and the other half of it is sitting in Azure. And the two environments are connected through ExpressRoute. So I'm going to go through each and every tier of this in detail and show you how things work. So before I get into actually showing how this stuff works, all the information that you need to know about ExpressRoute and how to use it and how to set it up are all documented in the Microsoft Azure website. You can go to the Microsoft Azure website, scroll down, and you will actually see links to on technical overview and workflows for configuration. So you will see step-by-step instructions on how you'd go through and set things up in Azure and on the Equinix side for you to get the whole thing working, including PowerShell samples and snippets that you need to run to basically establish this connectivity. So assuming you had connectivity, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to first log into a client virtual machine that's running in Azure. This client machine is what I'm going to use to actually access the SharePoint site, and it's kind of my gateway into the environment that's sitting in Equinix as well as the environment that's running in Azure. So as you can see from this page, this is a SharePoint farm running in Azure. There's a SharePoint client that's right here. We have a couple of application servers, a couple of web front-end servers, and a SQL database that's part of a SQL cluster that's been set up where an instance is sitting on-prem and the second instance is actually running in the cloud. Okay? So when I RDP into this machine, this is actually a VM that's running Windows, and it's running in Azure as a VM. This is running in the US West data center. We've established an ExpressRoute circuit between the Microsoft infrastructure and the Solution Validation Center in Equinix in the Silicon Valley campus that they have. Now, the first thing that Venkat mentioned was performance. You know, people really ask us, what does performance mean and what does latency mean, you know, in the grand scheme of things? Typically, anything that's sub 10 milliseconds is considered good for connectivity within a single data center. Now, we're talking about a case where one instance of it sits in the Solution Validation Center in the Equinix campus, and the other half of the infrastructure actually sits in the Microsoft data center in our US West region. And look at the latency that we've been able to establish between what's sitting in Azure and what's sitting in Equinix. You can see that there's a consistent latency of about 1 to 2 milliseconds between our data center and the Equinix data center. So if you're really trying to push workloads, you know, especially the ones that Shane mentioned around storage, and Norm is going to be here next talking to you all about, you know, how critical it is to, you know, use storage as a service. For that, latency is a very critical aspect. If we can deliver performance that's comparable to having two virtual machines sitting side by side in the same environment, that's going to make your life easy, and it's going to completely blur the line between what you're running in your premises and what's running in Windows Azure. So now let's log into one of the virtual machines. So to make things simple, what we did was we used 10.x IP addresses for the virtual networks that we use in Azure and 216.x IP addresses for virtual machines that are running in the Equinix data center. So we log into one of the Hyper-V hosts. This is a Hyper-V host where we have a domain controller, a bunch of application servers, and one of the SQL instances in the cluster. We have another server where we're actually running a big IP. Most people are used to running load balancers, and our friends from F5 were nice enough to give us an F5 load balancer for this demo. So we have actually configured an F5 load balancer sitting as a virtual machine running on Hyper-V in the cage in Equinix, and it's actually load balancing the front end of this SharePoint site. So I'm going to go back to the client machine in Azure, and I'm just going to go to this SharePoint site. So this is the SharePoint site. It's actually hosted partly in Azure and partly in Equinix. So as you can see, this SharePoint site is actually running really well. So when you log into the big IP, you can see that we created a machine pool. And you would see a whole bunch of members. As you can see, we've created the SharePoint site in such a way with a 10.4, 10.0.0.4, and 10.0.0.5 are two virtual machines running in Azure, and 216.221 machines are running in Equinix. We also have a SharePoint farm is a typical multi-tier application. It has a front-end, an application server tier, and a database tier. And we've built a clustered database. Now, in case of DR, which is one of the key scenarios that we are looking at, and we have to actually fail over the cluster, this is the SQL cluster that we can actually fail over. So for the sake of the demo, what I was going to do is the one that's on-premises in Equinix is the primary database that's running right now, servicing the SharePoint farm. I'm going to fail over the SQL that's the back end of our SharePoint farm to the SQL server that's running in Azure. And while we do that, I'm going to try and connect to the SharePoint farm that's running through the client machine that's running in Azure. So all I have to do is say failover. I'm connecting to the SQL database. So it takes about a few seconds. It's almost like having the two SQL servers right next to each other, and boom, the entire SQL cluster has failed over from the SQL server that's running in the Equinix data center to the SQL server that's actually running in Azure. So the primary SQL server right now is the SQL server that's running in Azure. So if I go back to the client machine and say refresh the page or click on any link on the SharePoint form, it's instantaneous. So as you can see, the failover was almost instantaneous, or it took a few seconds to fail over the database from what was running on-prem to Azure. So it's really powerful. If you wanted to do DR, and with SQL listeners and high availability and capabilities like that available, you can make sure that the failover is so instantaneous, or the downtime that you would experience when you failover is so short that you really don't have to worry about your business going down. So it offers you a good BCDR story when you do that. So some of the cool things that we had to do, you know, to enable this technology is that, you know, we offer connectivity in redundant pairs, as Shane mentioned. So basically, even if hardware failure on either of our sites happen, either be it on your premises or the Ethernet exchange or be it one of our Azure routers, you still have another redundant circuit that's available that carries your entire throughput. One more thing that we did with ExpressRoute was we essentially enabled connectivity to all Microsoft services, all Microsoft Azure services specifically. So you're not just restricted to virtual networks. So if you wanted to back up data into Azure storage, you could actually do it through the same ExpressRoute circuit. You don't have to go through the public internet. So large volumes of backup data that you want to push to Azure, media services, SQL databases as a service, websites, whatever service we offer on either a public IP address or a private IP address endpoint, can now be accessed through ExpressRoute in, you know, really well. Now, you already saw the fact that failover is near instantaneous, latency is extremely low. For offering storage as a service, which I'd invite Norm on stage next to talk to you all about, it's very critical that you need ultra-low latency. So I'd like to have Norm on stage next to talk to you all about how Zadara Storage, which is a storage as a service provider, has used Azure to actually offer their services to end customers such as yourselves. Thank you.
Thanks, Ganesh. Morning, everybody. I'm Noam Shinder from Zadara Storage. Thanks for sticking with us to the bitter end. I'll try to make this both quick and entertaining. And as all the people introducing this topic have said, There are a number of very interesting applications for ExpressRoute, and I'd like to describe what we do, why it's interesting, and how it fits into ExpressRoute, and how it takes advantage of the Equinix, the buildings, the infrastructure, the cloud exchange, in order to make all of this happen. All right, so first, what do we do, just to set context? We are an enterprise storage as a service company. Let me unpack that a little bit so it makes sense. Enterprise storage is what you think of as the products provided by companies like NetApp that we just mentioned, EMC, and others. It's storage that's very reliable, it's high performance, it's highly configurable, it is compatible with all major enterprise applications, SQL, Exchange, SharePoint, and so forth. And it provides block and file access to those applications, obviously with very low and consistent latency. That's how the world was until now. Those types of products also come with some downsides, which are very, let's call them non-cloudy, since we're making up words today. So the non-cloudy means rigid, means expensive, means not easy to change, requiring long planning processes, because whatever it is that you buy, you have to live with for a long, long time, years and years. What we do is we keep all of those things in the left column, so all of the enterprise storage capabilities and attributes, but we take away the bad stuff. We make it affordable, we make it highly flexible, no commitment. The commitment length is exactly 1 hour. You can literally change your mind and stop paying after an hour. You can change anything. No decision that you make, and I'll show this to you in the live demo coming up in just a little bit, any decision you made is reversible. So you're never stuck with the decision that you make. And thanks to ExpressRoute, you'll see you still get all of the consistency, the performance, the low latency that you'd expect from a private piece of storage. So one way to call it is enterprise storage as a service. Another way to say it is you get a single-tenant experience, but with a multi-tenant price. So the way that you consume this service, which we call VPSA, Virtual Private Storage Array, is, as you can imagine, in major public clouds like Azure. In fact, we're announced here at TechEd that we're now available at Microsoft Azure in two regions, East and West. We're available at other clouds as well, we're using the identical interface, which I'll show you. We're available at colocation facilities, and you can imagine that we make our Azure service available by colocating at Equinix. Well, since the setup, the rack, the cage is already at Equinix, but we also provide virtual private storage arrays as a service by the hour to Equinix customers. So to exactly what Shane was saying, Equinix is all about customers connecting to each other. Well, we're a customer that likes to connect and actively connects to anybody else who's on the exchange within the Equinix facilities, and thereby provide storage, enterprise storage, by the hour as needed. And then we're also available on-premise to any customer who likes what we do but doesn't want to share, so wants all of these attributes but inside their own facility. And when they do that, it's still purely as a service. They don't buy the storage. They, in essence, rent it from us with a very flexible and low-cost model. In this case, there's only a six-month commitment versus the one-hour commit in the other two models. In all of these examples, there's built-in replication from anywhere to anywhere. So from on-premise to cloud, cloud to colo, colo to on-premise, and so on and so forth. And the public locations that you can replicate to are on this map. So we have the two Azure locations that we've just announced, East and West, but we actually have eight other locations around the world, and any customer can replicate from anywhere to anywhere along those, and from private locations as well to any of these locations. And you can also imagine, just like Venkat mentioned, that maps like these you can interpret as the potential growth path. This is true for this map as well. So this is what's announced, running, and available for sale right now, but there are obviously future locations that will be announced. So far, so good? All right. So let's connect this now at a technical level to ExpressRoute. So as I mentioned, our cage sits inside Equinix, East and West. So Washington, D.C., and Silicon Valley. Then we connect to the Cloud Exchange. From the Cloud Exchange, that's where the ExpressRoute gateway lives, and then there's a 10 gig or even multiple 10 gig connection into the regions, into the Azure regions. What we do inside our rack is provision on demand the storage that customers request. And I'll show this to you live, how you make the request and how the storage gets provisioned in real time. Each VPSA, virtual private storage array, as the name implies, is private. So you get dedicated resources, they're assigned to you in real time, and they sit inside your private network. So there's a VLAN that's created just for you. That VLAN is connected to your private network inside Azure. So that means that traffic between our storage or traffic can only flow from your private instance inside our storage to your virtual machines in Azure and nowhere else. So everything fits within a hardware-enforced VLAN. And then, as I mentioned, we have the built-in replication, which means you can automatically replicate from east to west or west to east for any reason, for migration reasons, for disaster recovery reasons. And it gives you the ability to fail over and fail back. So let's say that a major storm is about to hit the East Coast, and that is your primary site. You can switch your operations over to west, bring your virtual machines up in Azure West, operate while the storm is battering the East Coast, and then once it has passed, you can fail back, synchronize the changes that have happened during the failover period to east, and continue as you were. All right. So that's the what and the how. So let's talk a little bit about who. You may be asking yourself, for example, well, Azure provides their own storage services, so why would I use this? And I think that's a very important question, because Azure Storage is good for certain things, but there are things that Azure Storage can't do, and all of our customers fit in that can't do this with Azure category. So I represented the Azure Storage solutions using these blue circles on this 2x2 chart. And what you see on the top left quadrant is if you're using local storage or VM storage within your VM, performance is excellent, but you don't get high availability because the storage is only visible within the VM, and if the VM goes down for any reason, either unplanned or planned, storage becomes unavailable. So this is not storage that's appropriate, for example, for a high availability database like SQL Server. Your other choice is Drive, or sometimes called Page Blob, and that is highly available. So it's persistent, it'll survive the end of a virtual machine, but your performance is not going to be the same as the local VM storage. So if you need both high performance and high availability, you want to be in the top right quadrant, and that's what we provide. And in addition to that, we provide all those things in the bullet list at the far right of the slide. So maybe you need file as a service as opposed to block. So you need NFS or SIFS access to your storage. Well, that's what we do. Maybe you need to mount the storage to multiple VMs at the same time. That's what we do. Maybe you need data at rest encryption. We do that as well. In fact, we do it with a very interesting twist. The key used for encryption and decryption is in your hands. So you create the key and you manage it. We don't have it. That's a good news, bad news scenario. Good news is only you control who accesses the data. If we can't, Azure can't, Equinix can't. The bad news is don't ever lose that key, ever. We cannot help you. So we actually put up a screen before, if you ask for encryption, when we literally state five different ways, you lose the key, you lose the data. Yes, I see your question in the back. Yes. We do. So, and you'll see this in the live demo. You choose your drive type, and this is somewhere, the bullet number four, drive type selection. So with the Azure services, Azure chose for you the drive type and the mirroring capability and so forth. In our case, you pick your own drives. They're dedicated to you. The spindles are yours. There's a mix of high-speed SAS, large SATA, and SSDs. And as I mentioned, every choice is reversible. You can change your drive mix later on. Yes, please. The storage is tiered, but today not automatically tiered. So as I mentioned, you have different drive tiers, and you can choose where to place your data, and you can also move that data from tier to tier. But there isn't, if you're asking about, will we automatically move your hottest data to SSD and your coldest data to big fat SATA drives? Not today, although we do provide an SSD cache included in every single virtual private storage array, so hot data does sit on SSD no matter what. Block and file. So you connect via iSCSI for block, and this is low latency, shareable block storage. Shareable is huge because then you can expose volumes to multiple VMs at the same time and run, let's say, a SQL server with Microsoft Failover Cluster, just like you would on-premise. This is one of the biggest reasons customers pick us is they have an existing application on-premise, block or file, and they want to move it to Azure, but they don't want to rewrite it or change the way that they've done their workflows or their processes. We provide that. You can take your, if it runs on-premise on top of any existing enterprise storage, it'll run on Azure on top of our storage. Yes? Not yet. So the question was deduplication and compression. Those are needed very sorely in traditional storage, because with traditional storage, you have to buy a lot of it, right? Because it has to sit there for years, and because there's a big penalty for guessing too low. In our case, you don't have to guess. You buy as much storage as you need, and if you need more, you buy more. If you need less, you can give the storage back. So the need for deduplication and compression is lessened, because you're not wasting anything. And also, you can, as I mentioned before, change tiers to cheaper storage if you have colder data. So it is a roadmap item. It does help, but it's a lot less critical with this kind of storage, because this whole mentality of I have to overpurchase just to protect myself against unexpected needs goes away. This is cloud storage. Okay? These are really good questions. Thank you. The storage does come with a 100% service level agreement, and support is included in the price. So we make all the pricing up front. You'll see this in the demo. And we also try to not have any surprise cost. And support is one of those things. So when you sign up for the service, you'll see how affordable this is. There's 24/7 phone, email, chat support. That goes to our engineers. We don't have call centers. We don't have contractors. These are our full-time employees who are actually building this product. This is because we believe providing enterprise storage is more than just the features. It's actually the experience that the customer gets. Before I jump into the demo, just examples of real-world customers that we have and how the major categories that they fit in. I talked about databases. If you want to cluster SQL in Azure using a Microsoft Failover Cluster, this is the way to do it. You use iSCSI, mount the volume or LUN to the VMs that run your cluster, and run Microsoft Failover Cluster. It runs a little check to see that it's able to talk to the volume from both VMs and that the VMs can talk to each other. And then you get green check marks, and you're up and running. We have a lot of customers in the academic vertical, universities and service providers to universities. The reason is that universities have a lot of projects. They could be semester-long projects or grant-based projects that are 1 or 2 years long. They don't want to own the storage for those projects, so cloud makes a lot of sense, and storage as a service makes sense. Also, they need encryption for student records. Next one is geospatial. We have probably our largest proportion of capacity sold, and by the way, we have over 3 petabytes deployed worldwide, is geospatial. It requires a lot of storage, requires big volumes, so we offer volumes greater than 100 terabytes. The storage needs to be POSIX compliant, because the major packages that are used for GIS, which is geospatial information systems, require POSIX compliant file storage. And of course, they need the elasticity. We announced just a few weeks ago a customer called Farm Intelligence. They grow by 10 terabytes every week. They fly remote controlled aircraft over farm fields. They take some measurements, and then they run big data analysis on that data. And they cover millions of acres in the upper Midwest. So you can imagine that's a lot of data, and they need the ability to grow as that data grows. And again, that's a 10 terabyte per week growth rate. And then enterprise NAS, customers who are using corporate file shares, SharePoint, and also proprietary applications that run on top of file shares like CAD and like media, all of those customers use our file capabilities. So with that, I'd like to show you this running in real time. And I'm logged into an Azure virtual machine in the West region, and it's reconnecting now. And let's see, just give it a second to connect, and I'll switch to the screen. All right. Looking good. Okay, so this is this VPSA management console. This is the screen that every customer gets. It's account-based. You register on our website, which is just zadarastorage.com, and then the registration is instant. There's no credit card or anything like that. And once you verify that your email address is real, you log in to this screen. So I'm logged in as me. This screen is different for every user. It shows the virtual private storage arrays that I've already created. So I have an Equinix one. This is one that would be used by another customer used by the customer for their Equinix environment. And then I also created one for connection to Azure West. And if I wanted a new virtual private storage array, I would just click here. I'd give it a name, for example. And I would select, of course, Azure. I would have the choice of regions down here, so east and west regions. So let's do west again. I then select what's called the Zadara engine. The Zadara engine you can think of as the controller. In this case, it's a virtual controller. That's important that it's virtual because it means you can change it. You can grow it or shrink it over time. Bigger controller will give you higher peak performance. Smaller controller will give you lower peak performance. Kind of a rough guideline, rule of thumb, the baby-sized controller, thanks to the 1 to 2 millisecond latency to the Azure VM, will provide up to 5,000 IOPS. And then each level above that will double the performance. So the basic will be a 10,000 IOPS machine. The boost will be a 20,000 IOPS machine. Blazing will be a 40,000 IOPS machine. And again, I can non-disruptively upgrade or downgrade among these engines. So I'm going to do a basic just as an example. My price just jumped to 99 cents an hour. And now to the gentleman's question in the back, are there SSDs and can I choose? The answer is absolutely yes. So you can see I have four types of drives. I have 300 gig, 15,000 RPM SAS drives, 600 gig, 10,000 RPM drives, 1 terabyte nearline SAS, 3 terabyte SATA drives. And in this case, no SSDs because they're sold out. So this is a live inventory. If I switch to East, I believe we have SSDs. No, even East is sold out. So SSDs are very popular. So next day or two, we replenish the drives, and you'll see the SSDs as well. Just to prove to you that the SSDs do exist, here's an example in LA. This is our LA colocation facility. Here are 200 gigabyte SSDs. So let's switch back to Azure and go. And it doesn't matter whether I do the baby or the basic. So let's do more of these. Let's go to West. Let's pick those 1 terabyte drives. So for example, let's do 3 drives. This is the minimum purchase right here, 3 drive minimum. Again, the drives are dedicated to you. So these are spindles that only you can touch. That means you never have to worry about performance issues with what other customers are doing. Guaranteed, there's nothing that another customer can do to slow you down. So the price just jumped to a whopping 73 cents per hour. And last choice to make is whether I want the Enterprise Suite, which is free. The Enterprise Suite is a set of features that includes snapshots, cloning, remote replication, and the encryption of data at rest. And at this point, all I need to do is submit the request. Request is received in this case, because I'm a known user, the virtual private storage array is already being created. If you're a new customer, you'll see a request pending, and what we do is we just contact you to make sure your request is legitimate. So we do this for two reasons. One is, you know, so somebody doesn't clean us out of inventory if they don't actually need it. The other is to make sure that I mentioned that support, right, is a big piece of what we do. So we actually make sure that you requested what you meant to request. For example, sometimes customers order, let's say, the 3 terabyte drives because they provide the best dollar per gigabyte ratio, but those aren't necessarily the right things to do if I have a low latency SQL database. So we ask a few leading questions like, when you ordered those drives, what application were you intending to run on those drives? And we try to catch any issue like that before it materializes. And as a result, you can imagine customers are fairly satisfied because we help them get it right the first time. So you can see that my new VPSA is already booting. My existing VPSA, just to give you a look at it while the other one's booting, you can see a few things about it. I have a change engine button. This is where I can upgrade or downgrade my engine. Again, non-disruptively. The application will keep running while I do that. I have the ability to assign a public IP. By design, this is only visible inside my private network inside Azure. So the same security paradigm that applies to Azure applies to the VPSA as well. If for some reason I need external connectivity, this button is how I do it. The public IP would show up right here. And the only thing we allow over the public IP is iSCSI. So we will not expose this management interface externally, and we will not expose NFS or SIFS outside for security reasons. So this is only good for iSCSI, and most of our customers use the public IP either for remote replication or for a one-time migration into Azure. Once the data is migrated, you can close the public IP. You can add drives at any time. I'll show you this in a second, live. You can adjust the cache size. So if you need more cache, you can just say, I have my included 20 gigs of solid-state cache. Maybe I want to double that to 40 gigs. So I just click Submit, and it's done. A few other buttons, Hibernate. Maybe I don't need to access the data for a while and I don't want to pay for the engine. The Hibernate button will put the engine to sleep, so the 49 or 99 cents that you're paying for a baby or a basic engine will stop. You'll still pay for the drives because those are still reserved for you. Your data resides on them. And then you can wake up the VPSA at any point. And then you can disable the enterprise suite if you want to. By the way, you can see the cache now is 40 gigs. It has upgraded. The new VPSA is ready, and if I click on it, I'll go to the login screen. Now, it sent me I have an email in my inbox now that has the temporary password for this, for security reasons. In interest of time, rather than go to my email and check the password, I'm just going to log in to my existing VPSA. So that's this guy right here. I'll get the same screen. So here I logged in earlier today and already changed the password to my permanent password. All right, so this is my VPSA management screen. Again, this is only available inside Azure. You can't access this outside, even if you turn on the public IP. You can see the 3 drives that I've ordered to date. Let's add a couple of drives just to show you how that works. So I do add drives. Let's maybe ask for 2 more of these 1 terabyte drives. All right. And if I refresh this, I should see my 2 extra drives. Sometimes it takes 5-10 seconds. Did I add it to the right one? Yes. So you can see 5 drives here. Let's give it a little longer. Give me my drives. There we go. So here are my 2 new drives. I can create a RAID group from those drives. Here's why I get to choose my RAID level, RAID 1, 5, or 6. If you're unfamiliar with RAID, think of it as the trade-off between 3 things, performance, redundancy, and space utilization. RAID 1 will give me the best performance, but it'll take up half the space. So from 2 drives, I'll get the equivalent space of just 1 drive. RAID 5 will give me much better space utilization, but the performance will be a little worse. And RAID 6 will give me better redundancy. I can lose two drives in a RAID group and still be up and running, but the performance will be worse, and so will the space utilization. In this case, since I only have two drives, I can only do RAID 1, so I'll do that. So here's my new group. I can create a pool. A pool is a group of RAID groups, and this is how I can non-disruptively grow my space. So I can just add more RAID groups to a pool over time. So let's call this my pool or something like that. I can choose whether the pool is optimized for size or for performance. So maybe this one will be a performance one. I can choose whether to cache it or not. And that's basically, usually you would want to cache it, but sometimes you know that your workload is very latency sensitive and it doesn't fit in the cache. It's a very large workload, in which case you would want to kill the cache so that you get direct access to the drives. Now that I have this pool, I can simply create volumes out of it. So I can create, this is a block volume, so let's give it a funny size so it'll be obvious, like 123, sorry. This is new volume, maybe it's 123 gigabytes, submit. So here's my new volume, 123 gigabyte volume. It's currently not attached to any servers. So this screen is where I can choose which VMs or VMs to expose this to. So this is important for security. I may have volumes that I want all of my VMs to see, and I may have volumes that I only want certain VMs to see. Let's say I have an HR workload that should only be visible to HR VMs. So here's where I choose how to attach this. So in this case, I've defined this server that I'm logged into, and I'll submit the attachment. And if I go to my server manager, right here, here's my 123 gig volume. If I go to properties, you can see the Zadara SCSI disk device. I can initialize it. At this point, now it's a LUN. Now it can be attached to a database as is. If I want to put a file system down on it, no problem. I can make a new simple volume. This will format it with NTFS. I can give it a drive letter. Let's call it H or something like that for Houston. And to make sure it's a quick format. And so now it's formatting. And when it's done, we should be able to see an H drive here.
Question.
Yes?
It
is, in fact, the server is an Azure VM. Ah, great question. So back here to this server screen. So I defined it on this screen, and here's you add server. And if you do it, if you're logged in from the server that you want to add, you just go to automatic, and you specify whether you're running a Windows or a Linux VM in Azure, and then there's a script right down here that you download and run it, and it just configures the iSCSI initiator for you to attach to this server. If you're on a different server, then this automatic script won't work, and then you just do add manual, in which case you can specify the server either. If you're using block storage, then you have to put in the SCSI IQN, that's the iSCSI qualifier number, or if you're doing file, you would just put in either the IP address, or you can actually do a block of IP addresses. Not in Azure. You predefine the server here in the VPSA management GUI. So that you have your Azure VMs, and they have IP addresses. And if you're running iSCSI, they also have iSCSI initiators with a unique IQN. And you would have to go here. And if you have a few servers, you would do this manually, just like I did. If you have many servers, you would just write a script. Everything that I'm showing you is API-driven. So the GUI sits on top of an API. It's 100% API coverage of everything, every last thing that we do. So you'd write a script that talks to the API and just names all of your servers into the system. Absolutely. Yes. So the question was, is the resulting disk shareable for clustering? And the answer is a resounding yes. That was one of the main reasons for doing this in the first place. We have quite a few customers running Microsoft SQL clusters on our storage in cloud environments, and also other, like MySQL running on using Red Hat failover, for example. Last look, and by the way, I can create file volumes as well. So if I go here and I can create a NAS share. And again, I can give it any size I want. Let's do something like this. I can choose whether I want to expose it via SMB only or SMB and NAS. I choose which pool it comes out of. And I can allow guests to access or not. And I submit. The attachment works exactly the same way as I showed before. So when I take this volume, I need to attach it to a server and for it to become visible. I choose the access type, choose the server. And you can see these are checkboxes, not radio buttons. So if I have multiple servers, I can check multiple servers, and the volume becomes visible to multiple servers at the same time, which you would need to do for clustering. So now if I go to here and I control R, so here's the my share that I've just created. All right, last thing to show you, then I'll end, is here are my dual controllers. So this is always high availability. There's no single controller option. So your pricing always includes the dual controllers. If anything happens to the main controller, there's an automatic seamless failover to the standby controller. The IP address floats over to the standby controller, so there's no remapping needed. The application keeps running. And there's a failover button right here if you want to simulate. Well, it's not a simulate. If you want to trigger a failover, and I call this a fire drill, right? You want to see what happens to your application in the event of a failover. The idea is you see what's happening, and you're able to both visualize everything and control everything, and including all the performance charts that you would want, IOPS, throughput, latency, and so forth. Yes?
In the event of a failover, is that something that we're notified of? Is that a notification for that? Is that something that your services
back and automatically start using? Yes, all of the above. So you can be notified of a failover. Some customers want to know, some don't. What happens usually is customers want to be notified early on, and as they gain trust in the system and see that the failover happened but nothing bad occurred, then after a while they say, okay, stop filling my inbox with failover notices, and then we can shut them down. And then we get notified. Also built into here, a little farther down, is the event log. So you're able to go straight into the event log and see what's going on, and the support system. So you can see the status of your tickets from inside this GUI, and you're able to submit tickets also from inside this GUI. So in the event that a failover happened that requires some action on behalf of a human, either on our end or on your end, a ticket shows up automatically here, and then you also get whoever you want notified gets an email as well that some action is required. And we always follow up on any failover that was not expected. Yes? We don't yet have a PowerShell specific plugin, but you're able to exercise the APIs through PowerShell, as you can imagine, and the APIs are largely REST-based APIs, and then the rest, whatever we couldn't do with REST because it wasn't available, are proprietary APIs. The full API document is available on our website, and. And that's, so the question was, is this manageable via System Center? It's another roadmap item, not yet. So today, in the interest of having the same control paradigm across all of our clouds, there's a single unified approach, and then we'll be developing plugins over time based on demand.
That
So in our June release, which is next month, we have a whole bunch of new monitoring and monitoring and management features coming out. So I don't have all of them off the top of my head, but they came from customer requests who wanted to be able to integrate with their systems monitoring tools. So it provides a fairly agnostic way to provide both the monitoring data out in a shareable format and also generate reports off of that. Yes.
Awesome. Actually, sorry for interrupting. If we could actually wrap up the session, and we're all the speakers will be here and we'll be taking questions, just in the interest of time. Mm-hmm. So I really want to thank all of our speakers here today for coming and sharing all these details, and obviously all of you attendees for waking up this morning and this is the first session. So we have a small token of appreciation on your way out. Make sure you collect that. All of the speakers will be here, so if you have questions, we're more than happy to address. Thanks a lot for attending.
Thank you.